Hello again, my friends. Today I'd like to talk about the qualities that help in spiritual seeking. Sort of the ability to circumvent the roadblocks. The qualities that are very helpful in trying to get to the bottom of finding out what you are. Because we are banging our head against the wall quite a bit in frustration. And we really don't have any guidance as to what's going on. We're just reading and listening and trying to figure it out. And we really have no roadmap. So if you want to go from point A to point B, but there is a traffic jam or the road is closed or the bridge is out, it's helpful to have something that says, this might be a way to get around that obstacle. Because those obstacles really are like blinders. If we don't understand that part, then we sort of get stuck there. There are really four general types of roadblocks or qualities one should have if one is to truly be able to grasp what's being pointed to. Many of these are naturally there. There's a natural sense that there's not something, that there's not quite, something's not quite right, that something in, there's a deeper truth to reality that I overlook in my day-to-day flipping from one thought, from one activity to the next. It seems to be something that resonates in spirituality. And sometimes we're very frustrated because we are reading or listening, inquiring. It seems like we may arrive at an intellectual understanding and we seem stuck there. So we will address some of those things. And the first really is the capacity to understand relativity. That the nature of the world is relative. The nature of appearance is relative. This is very important to understand. We take everything as absolute. Take what we see as absolute reality. The sun seems to go across the sky. It rises in the east and sets in the west. So it appears to move across the sky, yet we know that it doesn't move. We have no problem saying the sun rose and set, the sun is moving, but we really know that it doesn't. We're caught by that appearance. We suspend reality in preference for the appearance. Therefore, we say the sun is rising and setting, but it's not. The earth is moving, and that gives the appearance that you are stationary and the sun is moving. And when it's pointed out, that's just a little insight there, a little epiphany. Oh, yeah, I already knew that. This is sort of the flavor of self-realization. So it has taken appearances as absolute, taking reality as we know it as absolute and overlooking that it is entirely relative, that it's entirely made up of relativities. And the concepts are built upon this relative nature of reality. So we go through the seasons of the year. We're in winter, then comes spring, then comes summer, and then comes the fall, and back again comes winter. And we really get caught up in that as reality, that we are in spring, but we're not in anything. There is no such thing as spring or fall or summer or winter. There's no such thing. It's just a concept. Yet we can't wait for spring. We can't wait for summer. There's nothing wrong with the concepts. They are useful. They're useful in communications, but there is no such thing as spring or fall. So you're always stuck on the relative, and at some point, sort of mature spirituality, so to speak, we start to see the relativity of everything. We start to see how everything is dependent on a perspective. Because the paperclip might seem very small to you, but to an ant, the paperclip may be a building, as large as a building. We believe that paperclip to be as it appears, and we discount that it is only appearing that way to us, and it appears differently to others. There's also the inherent in that is the idea that that experience itself is a solution to my problem in spirituality. That the experience is necessarily in need of modification or manipulation. That the experience should somehow change and should be a better experience. And that's what we are always seeking in spirituality. But any experience is relative. Even whether it's a good or bad or better experience is entirely relative. Better than what? If that experience comes, then it is compared to other experiences, and then it's said that this experience is better. But that's entirely relative. If a guru then comes later and says, that's not it, you need a different experience, there's another experience here that you haven't yet had, then you're back on the search. Then that experience that you once thought was the bliss is now discarded, and now you're off to another experience. So it is really that I am ultimately not accepting reality because I have relativity taken falsely. I'm applying absolute to the relative every time. And we come to the point at some point in spirituality where we can recognize that. We see that that's really the reality underneath what we take reality to be. And when we start seeing the relative nature of all experience, then the bottom starts falling out. You start seeing it everywhere. We start seeing the relativity in everything. And then that leads to a natural dispassion, detachment, in that it leads to a natural, holistic view of what's going on, because we see that it is just relative, that it can be negated. In coming to see that everything that we know is relative, every single thing that we know is relative. It can't be any other way. It is entirely dictated by the mind. The mind dictates the world. There's a raw experience, and then there is a translation of that experience. And the translation is always dependent on the conditioning. It's always dependent on what you've been taught, what you've been told, the concepts which have formed. Every single thing that we know is relative. We can never know the world, what we take to be the world. We can never know it absolutely, because we're always seeing through the filter of mind. And what appears to be is always negatable. It's always revisable. Once we thought the earth was flat, and at some point someone took a boat out and tried to float off the edge, and they never could, and they came back and they said, the earth is not flat, and everyone thought they were crazy. At some point that relative knowledge could be modified by further knowledge. So everything that we know is relative. It's always relative, yet we take it to be absolute. That is the veil. That is the blinder. And at some point we come to see the nature as relative. Everything is relative. All of our concepts about reality are relative. Everyone. This leads to a certain dispassion, a certain objectivity. Not necessarily a turning away from the world, but not necessarily taking it as we have, sort of seeing through the old concepts, sort of seeing what we had been conceptualizing and sort of laughing at it, sort of saying, that's funny because that's not really true. I believed that for so long, but that's not really true. So we start to, the concepts become transparent, and we no longer really bite into that absolute nature of what we take reality to be. You start sort of having a dispassion towards experience, really. Any experience we no longer covet it as much. We no longer really strive after it as much. We understand the limitations of experience. We understand the limitations of things like money, things like power. We understand the limitations. We understand that these are concepts. Maybe we understand that they are really non-existent. That we trace back money, and we can never really find the real value of money. If I go to work for 40 hours, and at the end of the week I get a check or I get something deposited into my account, the numbers increase. And then I go to the grocery or the market and I take some things and swipe a plastic card, and the numbers go down a little. I've never really touched the money. I never really possessed the money. But because I possess a card which has numbers on it, then I can walk out with tomatoes and different sort of groceries. And I can pay the rent, pay the utilities, go out for dinner, whatever. But I never really see the value of that. I'm only ever trading concepts. And if I went to the bank and I said, I want all my money, they would give me paper and metal coins. But those aren't the value. Those are still representations of value. There's still paper with numbers. So what if I go and I trade those dollar bills for gold bars? Now I have some shiny, heavy bars of metal. Well, where's the value in that? The only value is because someone will give me more paper for these bars. Can I squeeze the gold bar and have the value drip out? Where is the money? What else can I trade these gold bars for, or this paper for? I find that money has no value. I find that there is no inherent value. It's only a concept. And the same thing with something like power. There's only power because everyone else says it's power. And once they no longer give that power, then that one has no more power. That power is not absolute. That power is relative. It's only given in concept. Because if you're the president and you have five vice presidents, then you have the power because they are secondary to you. But tomorrow you might be demoted and one of those might be the president. Nothing's really changed. Only the concept has been applied differently. So we start to see really the falseness of these things, of these achievements, these possessions, of these material things, of these concepts. We see the falseness of them. They lose their value. They lose their absolute value. They're seen for what they are, just concepts. Useful concepts. There's nothing wrong with them. We shouldn't go out and quit our job tomorrow because we've seen through the concept of money. But it's just a useful concept. It's not an absolute reality. So a certain dispassion comes, and ultimately that dispassion comes towards experience, because these are all experiences. That experience that I'm chasing, called enlightenment, I find to be false. I find that to be always a relative goal. It's always something which is relative. I understand the limitations of experience in knowing myself, which is the ultimate goal, is to know what I am, to find out what I am. And we begin to see the relative nature of appearance, the relative nature of experience. And when that takes hold, that has the effect of having the bottom fall out of our absolute perspective of reality, of appearance, of experience. We notice how we have always taken appearance as absolute. And in noticing that, there's a freedom from that. In noticing that, it is no longer the foundation or the paradigm that we have. We've also talked about dispassion, about sort of a detachment from all these things that we took to be so real, noticing the conceptual nature of reality. Everything is a concept. Noticing that everything that we have invested so much into really is a concept. Some of the most cherished things are found to be false. And then the inquiry is taking a look at these things and having the ability to notice the conceptual nature of things. And in noticing the conceptual nature of things, they aren't taken so seriously anymore. They're not invested in absolutely. They're useful, but they're not taken to be absolute reality. Ultimately, there's a dispassion even towards experience. That experience comes and goes. And in combination with the relativity, we see that experience is never really good or bad. Good or bad is a relative judgment. But that doesn't really exist. That's only an inclination. It's only a translation, a relative translation. So we really begin to see the falseness of relativity, the falseness of what we take to be reality through the conceptual and the relative nature of it. But we also sort of have practical maturity, if you want to call it that. There is sort of a composure. We don't really bite into these fancy spiritual things. We don't have to wear beads, and we don't have to do all these things. We're not carried away by this fantasy of spirituality. We're really sort of grounded in spirituality at this point. Things come and we don't really get carried away by them as much. We've sort of come to more of a grounded point. Really, through investigation of the previous two qualities, if you'd like to call them that, there's really a grounding. The things that once bothered us don't really bother us as much. The things that we got upset about before don't really bother us as much. We sort of start getting grounded. The small things that happen really aren't inflated. They're really kind of seen in their context. The relativities, once again, are seen. He did this to me. We start to see the relativity in that. We start to see that that's my judgment of it, but that's not necessarily the absolute reality of the situation. He has a perspective also, and maybe he is unhappy and he lashed out at me. Maybe he's having a bad day. So we have the capacity to sort of see the bigger picture instead of inflating it from my own perspective. That's an opening up really of a more holistic or big picture or compassionate viewpoint, being able to stand in the other's shoes. And that ego, we might call it, is lessened sort of naturally because we've sort of seen through all of the things that used to bother us, and we're able to try to see it from his viewpoint. So we're really sort of grounded and more open. And we've blown through all the spirituality, all the fantasy, all the chasing after experiences. We've blown through all of that, and we've come to rest in the conclusion that if I am limited, then there's no solution. There's no sense in seeking wholeness because my very existence presupposes that is false, that wholeness is false, that there is either I am limitless, limited, or I am limitless, that I am already limitless, that what I am is either limited or limitless. If it's limited, there's no sense in chasing spirituality. If I'm limitless, then the only problem is my ignorance of myself, the ignorance of what I am. And ignorance can only be resolved by knowledge. knowledge of what I am, self-knowledge, or realizing what I am. That's the only solution. Therefore, we are one-pointed in our inquiry into the nature of existence itself. Is it limited? How am I taking it to be limited? Because the only possibility, the only solution to the problem is that limitless is already the case. So how am I taking it incorrectly? Where is that ignorance? Where is it? How is it built? How is it constructed? How does it come about? Because it's the only thing which seems to obscure what I am, the ignorance of myself. So it is seen that the only way to resolve the problem is to come to know what I am through self-knowledge. Chasing experience has never worked. Waiting for another experience, a better experience, has lost all of its value, because I see the relative nature of experience. I see that it's not absolute. I see that no matter what the experience might be, it's always going to be a relative experience. It's always going to be judged. It's always going to be taken. If a guru comes along and says, that's not it, there's another one over here that's better, then you'll discard that in a second and go chasing after the next one. No matter what that experience might be. And that experience is, as an experience, will come and go. And when it goes, you're back into it again. Then you've lost it. Then you believe you've lost that which should have stayed. So I must not be there. I still must not be good enough. I still must have more to do. At some point we come to a point where we're grounded and we see the falseness of chasing experience. We see the relative nature of things. There really is a dispassion towards experience, a seeing through of the conceptual nature of things. Really, there is the grounding, the not getting carried away by the small things, not getting upset by the small things, being able to see things from the other's perspective, and opening up. And that leads into the last quality, so to speak, which is earnestness. At some point, an earnestness takes hold. It's called burning desire. It's overwhelming like a virus. They absolutely have to get to the bottom of it. And that's like a big bonfire. At first it was just a bunch of sticks and someone poured fuel on it and lit a match. And now it's exploded into flames. And that is an earnestness to get to the bottom of it, to find out what I am at all costs. It takes you over. It consumes you. Nothing can stand in the way of that. Everything is burnt in that fire. All concepts are burnt in that fire. All ideas that you have about yourself are sacrificed to this fire. Willingly sacrificed to this fire to get to the bottom of it. The roles, the responsibilities, the titles, the feelings, the emotions, the thoughts, the concepts, all the mental images that are constantly propped up over and over like a storefront. That storefront has to be made a certain way. And that's the image that's projected. That's what we take ourselves to be, is that image. That idea of myself is built. That's sacrifice. That's willing to burn through that even to get to the bottom of it. To really come to know what I am. And when we see through the absolute concept of reality, we see that it is always relative. When there's a dispassion towards the world, when there's a seeing through of the conceptual, we see that it has no absolute reality. We see that the concepts have no absolute reality. We see that the experience has no absolute reality. We see that the appearance has no absolute reality. And we're willing, we're open, wide open, like a door swung free, flown off its hinges. And there's a capacity of openness, pure openness. And then we're pointed to the reality that appearance is not absolute either. Appearance is not the reality. Appearance is not existence. Appearance holds no absolute separate existence. That there is one fact that is always obvious, and that is yourself, your presence. The world comes in that presence. The body comes in that presence. The mind comes in that presence. All ideas come in that presence. The idea of me, of what I am, comes in that presence. Everything comes in that. We call that awareness. The capacity of knowing. The presence of the subject, I. The activity of knowing going on right now. Now, in our direct experience, there is a world. How far is that world from awareness? Right now, how far is the computer screen from awareness? It's zero distance from awareness. If we had to point to awareness, we might point out the computer screen. Awareness has no form of its own. The computer screen appears in awareness. There's no distance. How far are you from awareness? Zero distance. You are zero distance from awareness. There's nothing outside of you. All ideas you have about yourself come in this capacity that we call awareness, this reality which we have taken to be outside. There is really what we call experience and what we call experiencing. See if they're not the same thing, the same reality, the same isness, the same being, the same existence. If we see the relative nature of reality, the lack of absoluteness, if we can see through the concepts, see the falseness of concepts, if we can be grounded, and if we have a really burning desire or earnestness to know what we are, then the smallest pointer can point out that you are that limitless. You are that limitless existence, which is the reality. Love to you, my friends.